Hi, I'm Moshe Zeldman. Welcome to Schmoozing. We live in times of unprecedented change and confusion. The rise of cancel culture, the promises and the threats of artificial intelligence, identity politics. We live in a society where people are more digitally connected but are feeling lonelier than ever. And we're in a world that seems to be edging towards World War III. I believe that Judaism can shed light on all these issues. Schmoozing is more than a podcast. It's a community of thoughtful voices on today's important topics. I invite you to explore with me how Judaism can help us deepen our understanding of the times we live in, confront the challenges we face, and bring some light into this world.
What I know for sure is that speaking your truth is the most powerful tool we all have.
That was Oprah Winfrey speaking at the 2018 Golden Globe Awards. Used to be in the old movies that somebody would take the stand and have to swear on a Bible that they're going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Today, we talk about my truth, your truth. You have your facts. I have my alternative facts. What happened to truth? Welcome to this week's episode of Schmoozing, the truth about post-truth. According to Oxford Dictionary, the word that characterized the year 2016 was the word post-truth. And it's defined as circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to emotion and personal belief. So it kind of makes sense. Don't we all have our own truth? Or is there really only one ultimate truth? Today, certainly in the media, there's a real battle over what's true. There are fact checkers at presidential debates. There's different media versions of what's really happening at the U.S. border with the refugees coming over. There's a lot of debate over what's really happening in Gaza, Hamas, Israel, the refugees, the hostages, what really did happen. And really, there are a lot of paradoxes. There are women's rights groups that can't condemn Hamas for their violence against women. There are LGBTQ groups that stand on the side of Hamas against Israel, while at the same time Tel Aviv is the gay capital of the Middle East. So you have left-wing organizations that advocate for democracy, free speech, women's rights, gay rights, and they support Hamas, which is as anti-democratic, religious extremist, repressive of women, anti-gay, as possible, and against Israel, which is a liberal democracy with free speech. This phenomenon of liberal students supporting the most unliberal organizations on the planet is a paradox. You can look at these condemnations and say they're not really about facts. They're not really about history. They're about emotion. There's no historical context. Who's ever heard of the Peel Commission, the Partition Plan, the Balfour Declaration, the negotiations with the Arab League after the Six-Day War? Once we're living in a post-truth world, it doesn't matter what actually happened. What matters is my opinion and my feelings about what happened. Tom Nichols, in his book called The Death of Expertise, quotes a study in 2015 to test the reactions of liberals and conservatives to certain kinds of news stories. They found that just as conservatives discount scientific theories that run counter to their worldview, liberals do exactly the same. There are obvious flaws in taking this idea to its logical conclusion. A sues B for physical assault. When they come to court, the 10 witnesses say that all A ever did was yell. When B responds and says, "It's true, but the way he yelled at me made me feel as if he smashed me in the face," that's not going to fly in court. Either you were physically assaulted or you weren't. You can say that words are like violence, but physical violence and verbal violence are not one and the same thing. Somebody with a health condition isn't going to get too far when their doctor tells them to take antibiotics and he says, "Well, my reality, my truth, is that my alternative doctor's pig urine recipe is going to help me more than your antibiotics." You can test it. Either it's true or it's false. Just because you have a reality that says gravity doesn't exist, it doesn't matter. It still hurts just as much when you trip and fall. These are objective realities. In distinction to objective realities, there are things called subjective opinions. It's perfectly fine to say, in my opinion, the Star Wars sequel wasn't as good as the original. From my perspective, strawberry ice cream is better than chocolate. The problem is that there's a gray area. There are things that are factual objective realities, but it's difficult to know because they're complicated. There are definitive tests if antibiotics are effective. We do control studies. We do clinical trials with clear statistical outcomes. I can use the scientific method to see if gravity exists, if 2 + 2 = 4, or if heat will make water boil. There are other things in life that are more complicated, and they aren't as easily testable. COVID. There are definitely doctors that say COVID was a real danger to mankind. There are definitely doctors that say that it wasn't. God. There are definitely people that claim there's evidence that God exists. I'm one of them. There are definitely philosophers that disagree and claim there is no evidence. The Palestinian question. There are definitely historians who claim that Palestinians have a right to their own homeland. There are definitely historians who don't. Just because there are two sides to the debate doesn't mean that there are two truths. One side is right and one side is wrong. If COVID is a threat and you think that it isn't, it doesn't mean you won't get sick. If God exists and you just don't believe he does, it doesn't mean you won't discover one day that you were wrong. My rabbi, Rabbi Noach Weinberg, used to love meeting people who called themselves atheists. Because he would say, oh, you're an atheist. That means you have a very clear conviction that there's no God. I'd love to hear your evidence. I want you to prove to me that God doesn't exist. Most of the time they would respond and say, well, I don't know for sure that God doesn't exist. I can't prove it to you. I'm not really an atheist. I'm more of an agnostic. Rabbi Weinberg would say, oh, an agnostic. Well, the philosophical position of an agnostic is somebody who says, you can't determine if God exists or not. There's no proof one way or the other. How do you know that's true? Can you prove to me that the God question is unknowable? Usually the response would be, well, I don't know for sure that it's unknowable. I just don't know if God exists or not. Rabbi Weinberg would say, okay, you're not an atheist. You're not an agnostic. You just haven't done your homework. I once came across a website. I think it was called the Atheists International, something like that. Anyway, on their homepage, they gave 30 reasons why we don't believe in God. We believe in the power of science and reason. We don't believe that someone died for your sins. We don't believe there's a hell with a devil and a pitchfork. You can be a good person without believing in God. All kinds of different reasons. So I wrote to them and I said, I happen to agree with you. I also believe in science. I also don't think somebody died for my sins. I also don't believe there's a devil and a pitchfork waiting for me in hell. And I also believe there are people who are good who don't believe in God. None of that means that God doesn't exist. Please give me your evidence that there is no God. So I got a mail back from the head of Atheists International. She wrote to me and she said, I don't understand why believers like you have to make it their business to try and prove to atheists like us that we're wrong. I'm willing to leave you alone and let you have your beliefs. I want you to leave me alone and let me have my beliefs. And my thinking was, well, you're the one with the website trying to promote atheism, not me. So I wrote to her and I said, I think you're making a big mistake. If God does exist, then you are making a fundamental mistake in your whole understanding of the purpose of life and the fact that there's an afterlife. And if you're right and I'm wrong, there are billions of people in the world like me living life under a total illusion that there's a God, that there's a higher sense of morality, that there's some sort of an afterlife. I expect people like you to be concerned and to want to educate me. And I'm concerned about you, and I want to educate you. One of us is clearly making a fundamental mistake about life. She never wrote back to me. And that's really what we mean by truth. Either God exists or God does not exist. Either the universe has an infinite creator or it doesn't. Either we evolved from single-celled amoebas millions of years ago or we didn't. Either we can trust the Palestinians by giving them a state on the West Bank or we can't. If we can, that solves the whole Palestinian problem. No more human rights problems, no more refugee camps, no more violence, But if we can't trust them and it turns into another radical Islamic state like Gaza, then there's no more Israel. So truth matters. Let's listen again closely to that quote by Oprah Winfrey.
What I know for sure is that speaking your truth is the most powerful tool we all have.
Wait a minute, Oprah. If there's no ultimate truth, then how can you know anything for sure? There is no for sure. All it is your feelings. You ask somebody, do you think there's an absolute truth? They say no. You say, are you sure there's no absolute truth? They say, I'm sure. Are you absolutely sure? Yes, I'm absolutely sure that there's no absolute truth. That's about as circular as you can get. So again, we're really talking about fact versus opinion. When somebody says, if we give the Palestinians a state, it will bring peace, that's an interesting discussion. It's not a discussion of the present or historical facts. It's a theory about the future. You can point to Gaza and say, well, look at the last time we tried that. Or you can argue, no, this time it's somehow going to be different. On the other hand, you can't say as a truth or as your truth that Israel is an apartheid state. You're making a statement about an objective fact. We would have to start by defining apartheid, which is systemic racism, and then look for examples or counterexamples to make the argument, is Israel an apartheid state or isn't it? Your feelings don't enter the equation. Or as Ben Shapiro loves to say, facts don't care about your feelings. So we really have two categories so far. Category one is objective, testable statements about reality with a capital R, truth with a capital T. 2 + 2 = 4. Gravity is real. Category two is subjective perceptions. What you think about Star Wars or ice cream or a two-state solution. These are personal opinions. So if we want to unravel post-truth and understand where it's coming from, we have to look at the bigger social theory that it stems from, which is postmodernism. Postmodernism explains all the ironies of the liberal organizations that support extreme ideologies. It explains all the confusion in the media over what we consider to be true or factual versus opinion. It'll really help us understand where this thing called post-truth really came from. So to understand postmodernism, we have to zoom out a little bit and understand where this whole trend came from. We have to understand, if you look at the span of history, we're living in a sea that has currents that are much larger than any one generation. We can veer left or right within our own generation, but there are larger currents pulling us in much more fundamental ways. Let's step back and look at the span of history to understand where this postmodern philosophy came from. I want to give a special shout out to Rabbi Levi Brackman. His podcast really helped me frame this question of the trend of postmodernism. We had between the 3rd and the 5th century, the rise of the Roman Empire. From the 5th century until the 14th is what we call the medieval period. During the medieval period, it was really the church that had the power. Church was the ultimate authority. The church defined truth. And this is pre-science, pre-rational thinking. In many parts of the world, the priest or the shaman or the head of the tribe with their superstitions would really determine the reality of how people were going to live. We had a shift between the 14th and 17th century, which was the Renaissance period. Renaissance period, the power shifted away from the Pope and the church leaders to kings and the power of the state. And along with it was the printing press, the beginning of people publishing their own thoughts, their own ideas. The world became more open to people accessing different kinds of thoughts, different kinds of ideologies. It was really the beginnings of secularism. And because of it, people began to question authority. People had access to information so they could make up their own minds. That led, in the 17th century, to the Age of Enlightenment, what we call the modern period. Here we have the rise of science, the scientific method. People put a prime value on logic, on reasoning. This is where you have the Industrial Revolution, machinery, people having their own means of making money, really the rise of capitalism. And it also led to democracy. So all of this was a threat to the church because the church was losing their grip on authority. And rather than embrace it and see it as a partner the church tried to shut it down, right? Galileo discovered heliocentrism, that the earth is not the center of the universe. This so much flew in the face of the church's teachings, their interpretation of the Bible, that the earth was the center of the universe, that the Roman Inquisition found him guilty of heresy and sentenced him to house arrest. These are the days before Wi-Fi or landlines, until his death in 1642. So because religion tried to shut down science and rational thinking rather than embrace it, so the modern thinkers also developed a real strain of being anti-religious. Today, you still find this debate, even in the ultra-Orthodox world of Judaism and certainly in Christian and the Muslim world. There's a proliferation of anti-vaxxers, hostility to science and reason, and a strong bend towards superstition. In many elements of religious Christianity, there's a belief that science is wrong about the age of the earth, about the age of the universe. They take the written Bible literally when it flies in the face of science. Judaism doesn't have that problem because we have an oral law. We have a whole different layer of understanding the nuances of the text in the original Hebrew that really answer all the questions of where science seems to conflict with Torah. We're going to come back to that in a later episode. So we have truth in the medieval period being defined by the church. Then in the Renaissance period, it shifted to the kings and the power of the state and the beginning of people seeing information for themselves, making their own decisions. It evolved in the modern period into truth being determined by science, logic, and reasoning. And now we've hit the postmodern period. Here you have the writings of people like Michel Foucault, Jacques Derrida, where the idea is that truth is about perspective. I have my truth, you have your truth. It's all about perspective. Truth is just a construct. Friedrich Nietzsche, as much as he was an atheist, had a very deep understanding of the problem of post-truth. He says the question, why science, leads back to the question, why have morality at all when life, nature, and history are not moral? We think of ourselves as free spirits, but really we aren't so free because we still believe in truth. Our faith in science is still based on a metaphysical faith. Even we know, as of today, we, godless anti-metaphysicians, our fire from the blaze is set alight by the faith, thousands of years old, of the Christians, which was also Plato's faith that God is truth, that truth is divine. But what if precisely this becomes more and more unbelievable? At this point, he says, we need to stop and take time to reflect. Science itself now needs a justification. And then he says, science is not nearly independent enough for that, because science itself never creates values. So I think Nietzsche is saying two things. Number one, he's saying, if there's no God, if there's no ultimate morality, then what does truth matter? Why can't I lie if it'll get me what I want? Who says that I have any moral obligation at all to be truthful and to be honest, especially if it's going to hurt my profits or hurt my relationships or hurt my ability to get ahead? But I think even more deeply, what he's saying is, without a belief in God, which he didn't have, without a belief in God, there is no such thing as truth. It's not that I'm allowed to lie because there's nobody dictating right and wrong. There is no such thing as right and wrong. There is no ultimate truth. Claiming the truth just becomes a tool that I can use to get ahead. If you look at the world of nature, nature doesn't function based on truth. Every animal learns to camouflage, to conceal, to trick its prey, and to trick its predator, because it's all about getting ahead in the animal world. So now you add social media into the mix, it's a whole different thing. People like to think that social media is a way of democratizing truth, because everyone has a voice, everyone has a say. We're not controlled by CNN and NBC and Fox News and the legacy media. But it's the opposite, because the social media influencers don't have a grip on reality any more than any of us. They are not the scientists, the psychologists, the political experts, the researchers. The top social media influencers are people like Cristiano Ronaldo, Kylie Jenner, Justin Bieber. It's what has led to the phenomenon of fake news and alternative facts. And that's why we're so interested in making sure that Elon Musk is pro-Israel, and we're bothered if Selena Gomez with her 400 million followers isn't, because we've let truth become popularity contest. So unless we reclaim the idea that truth actually matters, which is the whole moral basis of Western civilization, then emotions will win out over realities. As Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says, post-truth can easily slip into post-freedom. It sounds a little perverse, but when a murder suspect is on trial and takes the stand, he's asked to swear on a Bible and to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. He should really turn to the judge and say, "You're accusing me of cold-blooded murder, but you'll only take my word seriously if I promise not to lie? You're accusing me of something much worse." It's true. Because deep down, we all have a sense that in a world where truth doesn't matter, where reality doesn't matter, there's no security, there's no trust, there's no future. So again, just to review, so far there are two categories: objective truth and opinion. Within objective truth, there's two categories. There are things that are testable. Gravity works, 2 + 2 = 4. There are things that are harder to determine, like COVID or God or the Palestinians. And then the second category of opinion is really just your own personal view of things. The Torah introduces a third category. The Torah is exceedingly good at making truth a prime value. As a matter of fact, the Talmud says, God's signet, God's seal, is truth. We say, Hashem Elokeichem Emet, God is truth. So we talked about this in our previous episode about fluff and deception. The Torah doesn't just say, don't lie. It says, stay far away from lies. The Torah has no interest in whitewashing our leaders and our role models. Torah is very clear, doesn't pull any punches. Abraham was too compassionate, didn't want to kick Ishmael out of the house. God had to intervene, tell him to follow Sarah's advice. Jacob made the mistake of favoring Joseph over his other kids, which aroused jealousy, led to him being sold into exile. We know that Moses couldn't control his anger. He hit a rock instead of talking to it, got punished by not being allowed to bring the Jewish people into Israel, because Torah values truth. And Torah values honesty. Every debate in the Talmud is two strong sides vigorously opposing each other, peeling away each other's arguments, challenging each other to arrive at truth. What is the law supposed to be in this situation? We also intuitively value truth in our relationships. How do you feel when your partner says that everything is fine, that everything you do is great? You're not perfect. They don't love everything that you do. So ironically, when you make the bold move of being truthful and say, this bothers me, or I'm not happy with this, it's exactly that criticism that creates safety. Because now they know what you really think. There's security in honesty. In the physical world, we value truth because we can all do the same experiment and come to the same conclusion. That creates social cohesion. Feelings? Everyone has their own feelings. Some are going to be true. Some are going to be false. As Ben Shapiro likes to say, acts don't care about your feelings. But we all know there's more to the story. When your partner says, how does this dress look on me? You can be factual and say, it makes you look fat. It highlights the extra 10 pounds you put on this winter. It's factually true. And when she starts crying, you know that you're only digging yourself deeper by saying, hey, go weigh yourself. You'll see that I spoke the truth. The other alternative is, of course, to say it looks nice, but that blue dress you got last week looks even nicer. Does this dress look nice? No. But it's obvious that in a relationship, as much as truth plays a role, there's another factor called caring, love. In Hebrew, it's called chesed. The Torah doesn't want you to be Dr. Spock. So the opposite of Ben Shapiro's meme is just as true. As much as facts don't care about your feelings, people's feelings don't care about your fact. Now, I don't know Ben very well, but I have a hard time imagining him telling his wife, listen, honey, you're just fat. That's the truth. And facts don't care about your feelings. By the way, I'm not fat shaming anyone here. My truth, from my own personal experience, is that most women don't like to be called fat. And I'm following Oprah's advice and speaking my truth. So if you believe in post-truth, you can't be offended by my truth. And if you don't believe in post-truth, then just read the polls. Most women don't like to be called fat. So what is this third category? We have a body of writings in Judaism that are called Midrash. Midrash are allegories and stories written by the rabbis thousands of years ago that are there to bring out a principle. This is a Midrash taken from the story of creation. It goes like this. Rabbi Shimon said, when God was about to create Adam, the angels split into opposing groups. Some said he should be created. Others said he shouldn't be created. That's why it says in the book of Psalms, kindness and truth collided. Righteousness and peace clashed. Kindness said he should be created because he'll do kind deeds. Truth said he shouldn't be created because he's going to be full of falsehood. Righteousness said he should be created. He'll do righteous deeds. Peace, shalom, said he shouldn't be created because he's always going to be arguing. What did God do? He took truth and threw it to the ground. Thus it is written, says in the book of Psalms, let truth spring up from the ground. So the score was 2 votes for and 2 votes against. You have righteousness and kindness saying God should create man, peace and truth saying God shouldn't. It was a deadlock. So what did God do? He throws truth to the ground. I guess that was his divine veto. So now with a score of 2-1, God creates man. So when the Midrash ends by quoting a verse that says that truth spring up from the earth, what it's really saying is truth is no longer in heaven. It's no longer this pure, pristine, divine doctrine. Because all human beings have a limited perspective on the whole truth. No one person can see all sides of all issues. Number one, because of what we said in previous episodes, we're conditioned, we're biased, we succumb to social pressure, we're attracted to the fluff. And B, because we're just limited. Even in the most rigorous of rational empirical pursuits, science, we can never say that we see the whole picture. We're always discovering, rediscovering, tweaking our theories. At the end of the 20th century, scientists were saying that they've nearly figured out everything. Just a few small anomalies they haven't been able to resolve yet, but we're around the corner from having all of science wrapped up. And then bang, within 30 years, Einstein's theories of special relativity and then general relativity, the discovery of quantum mechanics that we're still trying to wrap our heads around, string theory, we now realize how little we actually understand about ultimate reality. So there are pure truths, mathematical truths, philosophical truths, but when it comes to our relationships or politics, or certainly anything that has any kind of nuance or emotion to it, it's very hard for a person to say that they have the whole truth. It doesn't mean there isn't a truth. It means every one of us has only a partial understanding of that truth. The real question is, whose grip on truth is greater? There's an interesting law in the Torah that when a rabbinical court is trying somebody for capital punishment, there are 70 judges that adjudicate the case. And the law is that if all 70 judges say the person is guilty, he actually goes free. Why? Because nothing in real life can be that black and white. So there are really 3 categories. Category 1, what's the truth, with a capital T? And that we can rarely ever claim to actually know, even though it's there and it's real. Category 2, what's my opinion about something? Purely subjective. Category 3, what's my understanding of the truth? There's things that we know. There's things that we know we don't know. And there's things that we don't even know that we don't know. So just because you and I have different understandings of truth, that doesn't mean that there's no truth. It means one of us is closer to reality. Logic will help us figure out who. So let's not go to the one extreme of post-truth, where we would say there is no truth, all that matters is my opinion and my feelings. But let's also not go to the other extreme of saying, I've got the whole truth. Unless you can factually prove that you actually do. Thank you for listening. Please like, subscribe, and also leave feedback if you liked the content, and especially if you didn't. These are important conversations, So let's keep schmoozing.